Delighted to have you with us. If you're visiting with us, it may be that we have some that aren't in our first service this morning because of the live wire event that's taking place at lunch, and maybe a lot of people waiting to come for that. If you are here and would like to come to that live wire event, by all means do so. You will have a good time, and there is always plenty of food, and we would love to have you with us. Let me mention this before we begin. As you are probably already aware, Christmas Day this year is on Wednesday, and New Year's Day is also on Wednesday. And what typically happens on Christmas Day, a lot of us are doing a lot of traveling. People will be out of town. We'll have individuals who will be coming into town for gatherings. So, what our elders have decided is that on both of those Wednesday nights, Christmas Day, Wednesday night, and New Year's Day, Wednesday night, typically we will have a lot of teachers that will be gone, and we are going to have a combined service here in the auditorium that will be a service in song for both Christmas Day and then again for New Year's Day. And if you're in town and are here, able to attend, then please make your plans to be with us. But keep that in mind, that there will not be classes on Christmas night and on New Year's night. And make your plans to be with us. I need to do this. I actually have already done it. But it hit me in the singing that we were singing just a few moments ago, and one of the songs that re-emphasized it was one of the last ones that Joe led us in, and that was, I gave my life for you, what have you given for me? Well, the response to that is, you gave your life for me, and now I strive to give my life to you. But in this, a worship service, every single one of us have our minds flooded with things that we have got to do, we're about to do, we are going to do, we forgot to do. We have our minds flooded with all kinds of things on a regular basis, and probably this month more so than any other. And sometimes we just need to take a deep breath and say, you gave your life for me. I give you my attention today. I give you my attention when I sing. I give you my attention when we pray. I give you my attention when we partake of your supper and remember you. I give you my attention when we open your word together. I give you my attention. And in giving you my attention, I give my attention also to those who are your people. And so we focus. And sometimes we need to do that, just to come back and focus. We're going to be looking at motive of the faithful. I'll tell you why in just a second. But I want to start off with this. Do you know what that is? If you do not know what that is, shame on you. That means you've either never cooked or never washed dishes. But if you have done both, then you know what that is. Also, if you do not know what that is, shame on you. It means you're not even reading the top line, because the top line tells you exactly what that is. It's a colander. What do you do with a colander? What do you use it for? It won't hold water. It won't hold anything. And that's the point. It's not supposed to hold anything bigger than those holes that are smaller than those holes that are in it. The colander is to clean and to separate. You take dirty vegetables that you've brought in or things that need to be washed, and you put those in the colander because you don't want to lose them, and then you wash off whatever it is that needs to be cleaned and washed off to separate it from the dirt that's on it or from whatever else might be on it that you do not want to be a part of it. That's what the colander is designed for. The interesting thing is that God designed this world in the very same way. The reason we are here in this world is we are in God's colander. We are in God's method of getting us prepared, getting us ready, getting us clean, getting us to where He wants us to be in order to be the people that He would have us to be. And the Bible lets us know that this is exactly what this world is about and what this world is for. And this is exactly the process that God is putting us through with all the challenges, with all the temptations, with all the sufferings, with all the things that we find such a challenge in this world that we live in. It's all because we're in God's colander. And the Bible will talk about it in these verses. John describes it when he describes the work of Jesus. And he says it this way. His winnowing fork is in His hand, and He will clear His threshing floor, gathering His wheat into the barn and burning up the chaff with unquenchable fire. That's God's colander. The very work John described Jesus is doing. A field with everything brought in from the field, chaff and wheat alike, straw and everything else, and it's laid out. And Jesus takes His fork, His colander, His winnowing fork, and He throws everything up into the air and allows the wind to blow it. And everything that does not have weight and substance, as the wheat does, is blown away. But the wheat falls right back down at the feet of Jesus. And that's what God intended. And that's what this world is like. James writes about it this way. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Doesn't matter what kind of trial it is. And here's the reason you face that with great joy. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Is your faith real? Is it genuine? Will it hold up? Will it hold up against the things you want to do? Will it hold up against the things that are demanded by others of you? Will it hold up? Is your faith real? Is it genuine? All of these trials that come our way test our faith. And the testing of our faith produces perseverance. We don't quit. We don't give in. We don't give up. And then he says, let perseverance finish its work. Takes a while for that to happen. Takes a while for that to occur. But you let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Think about that the next time you're going through a hard day. Think about that the next time the trials that are coming against you seem to be absolutely overwhelming. Perseverance is being built. Perseverance is being stabilized. Perseverance being given an opportunity to grow. I'm in God's colander. I'm on God's threshing floor. I am being sifted by God Himself. That's what's happening. In a world of different churches, in a world of different religions, how do we know which one's right? How do we know which one is the one that we ought to be a part of? That's one of the questions our juniors have asked that we deal with in our quarter this quarter when we talk about questions. I already had this lesson in mind before last Sunday when they said, hey, let's talk about this. And I thought, hey, that's going to be great because we'll work them out both. How do we know which one is right? How do I know if I'm right and if I'm where I ought to be? How does God separate? With all the different people and all these different religions, what's God looking for? And how does God separate His people from those that are not his people. The very simple word is called, he's looking for the faithful. The faithful. That's an interesting word. What does it mean? The interesting word means trustworthy, dependable. Stays where it is. Doesn't move. In the colander, it's not washed out. On the threshing floor, it's not blown away. And even if it is, it comes back. Because it's trustworthy. It's dependable. They stay with it. Stay with what? They stay with this. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. That's who the faithful are. The ones who stay with God's will. They listen to him and they stay with his word. Therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude. Because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. Arm yourselves with the same attitude as Jesus. And what did Jesus do? He suffered in the body whatever God wanted him to suffer. He went through it, all the while being faithful to God. Not doing what he wanted to do, but what God wanted him to do. Enduring not what he felt comfortable with enduring, but enduring whatever God sent in order to be faithful to God. And then Peter comes down to us and he tells us the same thing. You have the same attitude, and here's how you do it. You belong to Christ. Give yourself to Christ. And as a result of giving yourself to Christ, you have died to your desires. That's what you're striving to do. You're not going to complete it in this entire lifetime. But in striving to put your desires to death and live for what Christ wants, then you don't live the rest of your lives doing evil human desires. You spend the rest of your life doing the will of God. And when you fail to do that, you recognize it and ask God to forgive you. And he does. Because we know, or he knows, we're in his colander. He knows we're in the process of being strengthened. We're in the process of being made mature. We're in the process of growing up. And it all occurs in this life in which we live. So being faithful. Being faithful to God. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, becoming just like him. Therefore, I urge you, Paul writes, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, and this is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. I want you to notice again that last verse, verse 2. Do not conform to what everybody around you is doing. Do not strive to be like what everybody around you is thinking. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed. Change like a caterpillar into a butterfly. Metamorphose. But to change, to be transformed by thinking differently. By renewing your mind. Allowing your mind to develop a different focus, different thought pattern, a different way of looking at things. When you have that mind renewed, then you will be able to test and to prove what God's will is. What does God want me to do? How does God want me to be? And the answer will come out of exactly what God has said. Not what I think is okay. Not what I think is right. But it will come out of exactly what God has said. And then understand His will is good and perfect and pleasing to Him. So it all comes down to the same thing. Let my mind be retrained by who God is and by what God says. The whole idea of being faithful. I love this sentence. It's in quotes, which means it's not mine. It's in quotes without anything behind it because I can't remember where I got it. I don't remember where I read it. The renewal of our minds is the outcome when we present ourselves to God as living sacrifices. When I present myself to God, God, I'm going to do what you want. I'm going to be what you would have me to be. And I strive to learn from Him what that is. Then my mind becomes renewed as I begin to understand what He wants. And that renewal of that mind takes place when I make up my mind. I'm going to belong to God. And I'm going to find out how He would have me to be. And how He would have me to be toward others. And then this renewal of mind comes. And the work in the colander is having its process in me. And doing exactly as God would have it to do. Every time I think about these thoughts and a lesson around this line, I always go back to an illustration that has been in my mind since the late 1990s, middle 1990s. And I have shared this story with you on a number of occasions. But every time I share it in a classroom or something else, it seems like the majority of the class has never heard it before. And I keep thinking, well, that's why you keep repeating stuff. That's why Peter says, I'm writing the same thing to you in this letter that I wrote in my other letter. Hopefully, by that might mean that when I'm gone, you'll remember it. And so I'm going to tell this story again. You'll be familiar with it. It's the story of the sheep and the goats, and you'll be familiar with it, but to me, it illustrates this entire point. I was in Nigeria. It was my first trip to Nigeria. One of the other members from the central congregation was with me. He was riding up front. Solomon Agu, the president of the school, was driving, and I was sitting in the back seat. I won't tell you all the story, but the whole thing is kind of interesting. But I just want to tell you this. Solomon had put loose change inside the car in the console before we started. I didn't know what he was going to do, but I soon came to find out that change that he had piled up in the center console was highway repair in Nigeria. And whenever we would drive through a village, you would see all these little kids lined up on the side of the road, and when they saw a car coming, they would use a bucket or their hands or whatever and start throwing dirt from the side of the road into the potholes. And when Solomon drove by and those kids were throwing that dirt into the potholes, he would reach and get a handful of that change and toss it over the car toward those kids, and they would scramble for the coins. That's how they did the pothole work in the villages, and how you paid your taxes, wasn't your taxes, but how you paid for that work to be done. Going through one of those villages one time, we had about 6 goats that were walking single file on the right-hand side of us, and they were heading down toward the village, and we were going through it at a pretty good rate of speed. While we were going through it, the goat at the front turned to come across the road right in front of us. And Solomon slammed on his brakes, and that dust flew everywhere. He blew his horn, And as soon as he did, that goat that was in front jumped all the way back to where he came from, over to the other side of the road, and the other goats just stopped where they were, and they looked at the car, and they looked at the goat that was in front, as if to say, what's going on? Solomon, when the goat got out of the way, drove on, and he turned around, and he looked at me, and he said, if that had been sheep, they would have never stopped. And I thought, well, that's funny. The next day, we were driving down another road going into another village. And the very next day, I think God did this to give me this story. And it's not a preacher story. Every word of it is true. Which, by the way, I resent. But anyway, the next day, we were going down through the village, through a different village. And this time, there were about the same number of sheep that were walking single file along the side of the road. And as they were walking single file along the side of the road, Solomon comes flying up toward them. And about the time he gets near them, the sheep that's in front turns left to come right across the road right in front of us. Solomon slams on his brake, dust flies everywhere, and he comes to a dead stop. That sheep that turned left never flinched. He never even turned his head to look at us. He just kept walking straight across the road where he intended to go. And every one of the sheep behind him never missed a step. They walked right behind him, turned right in front of us, and went right straight across the road. Solomon, as they were going across, turned around to me and he said, see, sheep never stop. The goats stop. My first thought was, sheep are dumb. Goats are smart. But then I got to thinking, so why does Jesus say, I will separate the sheep from the goats? I will put the goats on my left side, and I will put the sheep on my right side. And I will say to the sheep, come, beloved of my Father, inherit what belongs to you. And then that hit me. Goat does what he thinks is best. That's what Eve did in the Garden of Eden. A goat will think for himself. And he will do what he thinks he ought to do. Sheep will do what the leader does. They are perfect followers. They follow perfectly. That's God's colander. That's how he separates. And he gives us an example of the perfect follower, sheep. And that's what he calls us to be, sheep who follow the shepherd. And the shepherd is Jesus. Not us, not ourselves. Not those of great influence over us, not even our leaders. We follow him. That's what he's doing in this colander. That's what he's doing in this world. That's what he's doing to every single one of us. So how are we doing? How are we doing in this colander of life? How are we doing in connection with our shepherd? How are we doing? That's the answer for each and every one of us. If you're not following Christ, you need to become a Christian. And you need to be baptized into him and devote your life to him. If you're not living as Christ would have you to live, you need to ask him to forgive you. And you need to make up your mind that you will listen to him and you will follow him. If you need to respond to his invitation this morning, we offer it to you as together we stand and as we sing.